Radio Hall of Fame. The Radio Hall of Fame is presented during the full hour ahead by the Philco Corporation, makers today of electronic battle equipment for the fighting forces of the United Nations. Makers tomorrow of equipment for good living in a free world united by victory. Cooperating with Philco are the editors and correspondents of Variety, who report for the Philco program all the news of all show business the world over every week. This week, the editors of Variety recommend for your pleasure, and Philco delights to honor in your name,
from Hollywood, George Burns and Gracie Allen.
From the New York Legitimate Theater, Milton Berle, comedy star of the Ziegfeld Follies.
From the Broadway Variety Houses, Willie Howard.
From Washington and the World of Affairs, Raymond Graham Swing.
From radio, Georgia Gibbs, singing star of the Jimmy Durante, Gary Moore Show.
Conducting the Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus, Paul Whiteman. Our master of ceremonies, the distinguished composer, critic, and commentator, Deems Taylor.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Deems Taylor speaking for Philco. As you may have gathered from our list of players, today's program runs largely to laughter and song. A good notion, we think, for the year's beginning. Would you mind skimming through the cast of characters once more, Mr. Riggs?
George Burns, Gracie Allen, Raymond Graham Swing, Milton Berle, Willie Howard, Georgia Gibbs.
I suspect that Mr. Swing down in Washington must feel a bit surrounded. However, that's what makes a variety show. Variety. Highly recommended, I hear, as the spice of life. Also, it's a good idea to have Paul Whiteman as part of any such various goings-on, for Paul is constantly coming up with provocative notions. For example, the Whiteman Overture, now pending. It's based on a tune that Paul imported from Europe back around 1925, when hearts were young and gay. And it represents Paul's choice for the first entry in a sort of Hall of Fame memory album. I'm sure you'll recall Valencia, performed now with a special New Year's bubble and glow. Curtain, please, and the overture. When Valencia was a brand new tune, Willie Howard and his brother Gene were the comedy stars of George White's Scandals, 1926 edition. That was the show in which Ann Pennington danced the Black Bottom and Harry Richmond sang the Birth of the Blues and whatever became of the McCarthy sisters, or do you care? Well, the important fact is this. Willie Howard goes on and on with no diminution in the quality of his grotesque humor. Somewhere along the road since 1926, Willie had an idea which he has since built into the sort of show business classic that belongs on the Radio Hall of Fame. He created Professor Pierre Ginsburg, teacher of French. His present refinement of that droll character is variety's first choice for your amusement today. Willie is assisted in his dialectic endeavors by one Al Kelly, a specialist in utter confusion. Meet Professor Pierre-Alphonse Latour-Gainsbourg, better known as Willie, You'll Eat Strawberries and Like a Howard.
Good afternoon.
How are you, Monsieur Dims Taylor?
And how long have you been in this country, Professor?
Oh, Dims, to tell the truth, I'm very short of here. I just arrived from North Africa.
North Africa?
Yes.
While you were there, did you happen to meet General Giraud?
Who's this?
Giraud.
Me, Giraud. There's going to be Giraud below outside tonight, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I met the general, but he was very sick in the hospital.
Oh, what was wrong?
Something wrong with De Gaulle.
With that, Professor, you can take the air.
You too, Mr. Schneider. I mean, Mr. Taylor, excuse me. My dear pupils of the radio, you know, it is very, very easy to learn how to talk French, providing you listen to every one of my lessons. Now, if you do, in a very short time, believe me, you'll be able to talk me as good as I'm talking. But to get the greatest benefit from my lessons, you must secure one of my textbooks entitled French in 10 Easy Lessons or 5 Hard Ones. You can obtain this book, mind you, free of charge, just by merely sending in your name and address on a postage card or tear off the top of your neighborhood grocer or a facsimile or a stale bagel, anything you got. Although, mind you, although this book will be sent out for free of charge without cost, no money yet to pay whatever, there will be a sale tax charge of 94 cents. Still charge of $1.22 handling and mailing, making a total of $2 in consal of year, 16 cents. With each book I give away free, I also give you one ticket to see Oklahoma. But you gotta take the bus. Now the first situation we take up tonight in French conversation. We say you're living in Paris and the landlord will come for the money for the rent. You should tell him in French that you haven't got the money with you right now. So you're talking French like this. Gay avec. Gay avec. Of course, I'm speaking occupied French. And now, my dear pupils, before I'm singing off, I would like to quote the saying of the great French philosopher, Marc de le Fou de le Cancer de le. Angle vite, la patin, la belle, on te compte, son nom, mon pauvre Dieu, on te l'enque. Who said? What did he say, monsieur? Do unto others before they do unto you. And now,
pardon me, Professor, before you go, would you be good enough to give me a little advice?
But a French lesson?
Something that has to do
what
with
is the trouble here?
Well, you see, I've been going around with a girl for some time, and she told me to trade back with the theme because I found out she wouldn't give me a chance to talk about any part of my own theme. I tried to grade back the floor, which in my case is so bad because I have no way
wait
to...
Wait a minute. What are you doing, the flight of the bumblebee? Talk slowly and stinkly right in the Mickey phone.
Well, you see, when I started going with the girl, Professor, I had no idea that she's the one who wants to grade back to the Floyd. Because after all, you must realize, in my case, I am the type of a man that wouldn't even want to go back to famous. Because she's the one who tries to tell me how to cross these.
You want to?
But I want to get out the best way I know without telling her how to cease for. But if she doesn't do the grave, you must realize I wouldn't tell me.
Without having?
Without having Dr. B, she would try to tell me, but otherwise I wouldn't save him.
Who did that?
Who did? The girl did.
Yeah?
Yes, when I confronted her with the idea, she told me I was hypocrite. I don't have to pay back any part of the bean for it. After all, in my case, it's only a plain play.
Naturally.
If you tell me that to sign me back on the throne, I don't have to vex her back at my own say because I realize that is the only way I
you
can
mean
find
you
a
want to get
without getting out the best way I would try to save it. But if you don't tell me the throne, I can't pass it for because that's my way to
fall. Naturally.
Well, all right, then why do you want me to cleave? I don't want to save it.
Who's driving the car now?
We haven't any blame.
Why don't you see the smiling Irishman?
I don't want to sell anything, Professor. I came for advice. You must realize my case is not the type of an ordinary trade because you want to tell me how to see it. It's only a matter of ploy. But otherwise, it wouldn't gate the favor.
You mean you don't want to have
I don't want to have any of my own savings since you tell me what the favor is. But otherwise, why do I have to go at beam? Until you want a bank lead, I would try myself to go for
without having.
Now, having back a long beam, she would give me the play.
Without doing it.
That's the only way to trade for it. Otherwise, you can't stand for it.
But what's that?
That's the way she wants to trade, but you mustn't fall.
You talk nice, but nothing comes out.
Well, why don't you tell me how to spade? Do you realize how I cross me? Is that the way you want me to understand the bird?
Well, that's different. Now you're talking
right.
My language. Boy of mine, I feel very sorry for your case. And I'm going to try to help you out.
Thank you, Professor.
Which way did you come in here? To the stage entrance?
North of the train.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me it's your mother-in-law that's causing all this trouble for you.
You're right, Professor.
You have no problem there, young man. Go home, young man. Go home. If you're at home someplace, please go home. That's my advice to you.
Well, Professor, evidently you don't seem to understand that I do have the right to live my life any way I see fit, without interference on the part of her mother because she embarrasses me a great deal, and I have the right to resent it. And I resent it very strenuously. That's why I came to you to help me solve this problem.
I should have quit when I was ahead. My friend, you know, today we are all in the same boat.
You're right, Professor. We are in the same boat.
You do the rowing. I'd like to recite a little recitation to you.
You want to recite a recitation?
Yes.
I have one here that I wrote for my girl, which I think is the most beautiful thing that has ever been prayed.
Let me hear it.
All right. She crazed and knew that things would void. There wasn't a salmon for any spread. For feeling the void and things to pray, she dropped the sin and there she fought.
Ain't that beautiful?
The recitation?
No, that music. I'm now going to translate it for you, ladies and gentlemen. He put his arms around her waist, upon her lips he placed a kiss. I've sipped, said he, for many a cup, but never from a mug like this.
As we stand at the threshold of a new year, the men and women of Philco Corporation reflect upon the opportunities and responsibilities that lie ahead. Looking back upon a year of continued achievement in the production of war equipment, they dedicate themselves anew to their war production pledge, more, better, sooner. For Philco soldiers of production, the headlines of the past few days have a special significance. We can win in 1944, says General Eisenhower, if every man and woman does his or her full duty. That's a call to arms at Philco. The invasion of Europe has already begun in the Philco laboratories and production lines. As the leader of the radio industry for 12 straight years, their special assignment is the development and mass production of radio and electronic equipment for the planes and tanks of the United Nations. And they're doing their part now, that our men may strike with decisive might when the hour is at hand. With all America, they look to the new year with hope for victory. And with high anticipation, they await the return of peace when they can translate the astounding developments of their war research into finer products for your comfort, convenience, and entertainment. In radio, television, refrigeration, and air conditioning, under the famous Philco name.
A Girl and a Song, Georgia Gibbs and Shoo Shoo Baby. Regular listeners to the Jimmy Durante, Gary Moore show on Friday nights have been telling the world about Georgia for some months now.
And insiders in the music business, according to Variety, have been saying, here's a new kid on her way. That's the girl, Gorgeous Georgia. The song was written for Miss Gibbs last spring when she opened a cafe society downtown. The first time she sang it on the air in Hollywood, it created a considerable stir among the Vine Street set. Enough stir so that someone else promptly snatched up the recording rights. You've heard the song many times since, and here for the Hall of Fame record is the original superheated Georgia version. How about that, Miss G?
Ready and waiting, Mr. T.
The lady's waiting, Mr. W.
You see them up and down the avenue, but now he's wearing the navy blue. She had a tear in the corner of her eye as he said his last goodbye. Shoo, 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 baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Pop is off to the seven seas. Don't cry, baby. Don't sigh, baby. Bye, 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 baby. When I get back, we'll live a life of ease. Seems kind of tough now to say goodbye this way. Papa's got to be rough now, so he'll be sweet to you another day. Shoo, 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 baby. Shh, baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Papa's off to the seven seas. Shoo, 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 my baby. Shoo, 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 my baby. Shoo, 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 my baby. Papa's off to the seven seas. Don't cry, cry, my baby. Don't sigh, sigh, my baby. Bye, 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 my baby. When I get back, we'll live a life of ease. Seems kind of tough now to say goodbye this way. Papa's got to be rough now so he can be sweet to you another day. Shoo, 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 baby. Shh, baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Papa's off to the seven seas, the seven seas, the seven seas.
Beneath the laughter and song this new year, I'm sure most of us have felt a growing anxiety as the stupendous military action impends on the shores of the European continent. To assess for us the portents of 1944, Variety has chosen for the Hall of Fame, and Philco is proud to honor, Raymond Graham Swing. The voice of Raymond Swing is the voice of reason and common sense. His countrymen have discovered that fact for themselves in the years that he's been on the air, in the terrible years since Hitler's rise. His voice today is the voice of hope in this coming trial. This is Raymond Graham Swing, speaking from Washington.
1944 opens before us a demanding year, one which imposes sacrifice, suffering, and sorrow. But it pledges a reward for its exactions. It will be a year of triumph. Beyond the foreboding storm shines for the Allies in Europe the morning of victory. Triumph and victory can be short-term words. They can mean only that a stronger violence has overpowered a lesser violence. The assault on the citadel of Hitler will be that, but it will be far more. The purpose of this war lies deep. It is a war for liberation in the exalted meaning of that word. And it sent out its challenge long before actual combat began. To recall that challenge, I'm repeating something I said on May 10th last year, on the 10th anniversary of a tremendous event, the burning of the books in Berlin. I know I didn't appreciate the full portent of the warning of that event, but it came to me shortly, and I see again vividly the figure of the man who taught me. He was an unusually tall and unusually narrow man, with legs as long as Lincoln's, a rounded stoop of the shoulders, and a long, gaunt face. He'd been chairman of the Social Democratic Party and the Reichstag of the Weimar Republic, and his name was Dr. Rudolf Breitscheid. In my newspaper days in Germany, I'd come to know him well, and after Hitler seized power, I knew that he had managed to escape to France, and then he came to London, and I was deeply moved to hear that I should be allowed to have an hour with him alone at the home of a member of the House of Commons. I found him in that home, slumped, and it seemed almost collapsed in a big chair. He looked up at me with large eyes, filled with the pain one sees during a mortal illness. The first glance at him told its story. Here was a man whose life work was in ruins, who had lost not only his country, but all possibilities of serving his country or himself, a man bereft and broken. I expected him to tell me in that hour about himself and his escape, and to give me the news of our personal friends in Germany, many of whom I knew had been tortured by the Nazis. I was keyed up to withstand the shock of the brutality our friends had suffered. But I was stopped short by his tragic appearance and was unable to start the conversation. I hoped he would begin without prompting in his own way. He was silent for quite a time. Then he looked up with an expression of utter helplessness in his face. And he said weakly, but with horror, "Swing, they're burning books." I was startled, and for a moment I thought he was being irrelevant. I was expecting news of persecution, torture, and terrible personal disasters. And he began by mentioning what I already knew, that in Berlin they were burning books. But he was a true messenger of tragedy, for that was, in the furthermost depth of the tragedy, the burning of books. That was the symbol of it. A power had been formed in Germany capable of assassinating ideas, of destroying other men's words of truth, of shackling the freedom of men's minds. And that was what distinguished the Hitler regime from all other modern political menaces. Personal hardship, arrest, even torture, these were the inevitable lacerations of violent revolutions. But what other movement had begun with the flaming signal to mankind that it was no longer to be free to think, to search for truth, to exercise its mind? This was promising the end of the aspirations of all civilization. True, Hitler's organized hooligans were torturing their enemies, beating them with steel whips, expressing against them the brutal excesses of diseased personalities. But that was not the mark of the regime, nor the meaning of it to Hitler and his close associates. It meant to them a blow at their chief foe, for they were set to wield power over the world. The chief foe was not the hapless Democrats of Weimar Germany, nor was it the Jews. The chief foe was thinking, ideas, the free search of truth. And Hitler struck that foe. He put his foe in a fire. That fire has not died, and it will not have died until Germans themselves have free minds again, and no power remains on the face of the earth to deny the liberty of man's mind. And when the history of this awful war is written, there's a description of it that would be fitting. It was the war to put out the fire which Hitler lighted in Berlin that day in 1933.
With Paul's assistance, we fade gracefully into the ether at this point. On the other side of the fade-out, we have a date with George Burns and Gracie Allen, Milton Berle and Georgia Gibbs. Would you kindly trip the switch, Mr. Riggs?
This, Mr. Taylor, is the Blue Network.
the Philco Hall of Fame, Act Two. In the spotlight, grinning broadly, is our Mr. Whiteman. And with his next contribution to this afternoon's doings goes a tale of tribulation and woe. You have the floor, Paul.
The story begins with Lawrence Melchior, who was a party to this shindig last week. As a compliment to Lawrence, I had prepared what I consider a pretty striking popular version of a Scandinavian classic, Griegs in the Hall of the Mountain King. We rehearsed this little dilly about 600 times, and then Lawrence drew so many laughs with Fred Allen that we had to cut it out of our show on the air. Now, I'll be darned if I'm going to let all that energy go to waste. It's just too much to ask a man with my physique. So we're going to do the same tune right now.
For Lawrence Melchior, wherever he may be, in the Hall of the Mountain King is arranged in a new tempo by Al Sachs. Upon a time, before Signor Marconi had his bright idea about ether waves, it was the ambition of every comedian to star in the Ziegfeld Follies. Nowadays, the funny men yearn for a high Crosley radio show. We have with us this evening a bright young man who, in his comparatively short span of years, has satisfied both ambitions. Variety recommends, and the Hall of Fame accepts with open arms, Milton Berle, top-billing lad in the current Follies.
Thank you very much, Deems Taylor, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's really indeed a pleasure to be here tonight on the Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame, what am I doing here? Now I know I'm a bust. Well, it's the second day of the new year, and I feel great, really. I got up this morning at 6 o'clock, stood under an ice-cold shower for 20 minutes, closed the umbrella, and went right back to bed. But I made a resolution, really. I'm going to start the new year with a clean sheet, if it ever gets back in the laundry. Walter Winchell, he was very sweet. He remembered me this New Year's. He sent me a very lovely bouquet of roses with a lovely card. It said, "Roses are red, sometimes they're pink. Sometimes you're wonderful and sometimes they were beautiful roses." I had a swell time this New Year's Eve. I started off by having one rye after another. I must have at least had about 10 slices. And must have had about 10 slices. I liked it. Well, What fun I had, really. I made the rounds. I went to the Essex House, the Town House, the Hampshire House, and I wound up in the Station House. I'm not kidding. Everybody was so drunk, I could hardly see them. And, you should have seen Broadway. Boy, was it crowded. I was about to put my hand in my pocket when I made a left turn on 45th Street. And the crowd pushed me into a phone booth with two other people. This I must tell you. One of the guys thought I was a telephone, so he dropped a nickel in my mouth, stuck his finger in my eye, and started to dial my face. Yesterday, Paul Whiteman was very, very sweet. He invited me to his house for a New Year's dinner. For a holiday, the prices were very reasonable, too. I mean it. He didn't have the usual turkey this year. He bought a new one. The turkey, I think the turkey weighed 94 pounds. It was so fat, they had to put a girdle on it to keep the stuffing in. There were a lot of interesting people at the party. I saw a glamour girl there. She was just reeking with perfume. A playboy just reeking with money. Because I was there just reeking. Where's the rest of the joke? Wait a minute. What a swanky party. They didn't serve napkins. The waiters walked around with roller towels. I mean it. Then they served, they served navy bean soup. And I called over the waiter. I said, what are those two noodles doing in there? He said, shh, convoys. I said, now look, waiter. I said, I'm Milton Berle. Have you got any beef? He said, yeah. Why are you on the radio and why am I a waiter? They had so much food. During the meal, I reached across the table for another piece of butter. Armless Berle, they call me. One guy at the party made a glutton out of himself. He had two orders of turkey, three orders of cranberry sauce, and six helpings of stuffing, some pie and coffee. Boy, was I sick. I was eating food so fast, one girl thought I was a romantic screen star. She said, look at that, Clark Gable. Oh, no, I was wrong. She said, look at that club gobble. That's what... But that Paul Whiteman, he can put away a little food, too. He ate everything on the table, then he started chewing on something. I said, wait a minute. I said, that's my shoe. He said, too late. I got gravy on it. And Deems Taylor, he had a lovely girl with him, a buxom buzzard. She looked beautiful. She was dressed very formal. She wore a strapless potato sack with open-toe army shoes. I'm only kidding, Dave. She was a lovely girl. She was the type of girl you'd like to take home to your mother in a cage. She had a real strong face. She got that way from carrying the bags under her eyes. And boy, could that girl drink. Could she drink? She'd been under the table so often, she's going steady with the face on the barroom floor. Of course, I didn't fool around with the girls. I just stood on the side like I do every New Year's, and I reminisced. I remembered where I was born. In a little town just outside of Boston, Phoenix, Arizona. I'll never forget the day that I was born. People stood around my crib and they stared at me until I got so embarrassed I got up and put on my kimono. You should have seen my horoscope, too. I was born under Taurus the Bull, but I didn't mind. It was shady there. That was a Lollapalooza, wasn't it? But when it came to brains, I was in a class by myself, kindergarten. But after all, what's life? A good magazine. You see, which joke are you working on, Don? You see, in my early days, I had to work hard. I worked like a dog, and soon I began to look like one. I'm not kidding. I started to get fan mail from Cocker Spaniels. But I, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't come here tonight to talk about myself because I'm in no mood for flattery. I'd rather talk about my cousin Joe, who's in Camp Ritchie, Maryland. I just got a letter from him, and I'd like to read it to you. He's a great soldier, Joe. He's been in the Army 3 years, and he's just been promoted. He is now a private. I mean, he used to be a buck private, but he was shooting dice, and someone took the buck away. But here's the letter. I'll read it. It starts, says, Dear Milton. Calls me by my maiden name. He says, Dear Milton, I'm writing this letter from the guardhouse. The captain caught me peeling potatoes with his electric razor. But I don't care. I just got my wings today. Tomorrow I get the rest of the chicken. I like the Army. I like the spirit the soldiers have down here. One for all and all for one. Until a pretty girl passes by, then it's every man for himself. I went to the GI New Year's dance. GI dance. That's a commando raid set to music. I dance, Cousin Milton. I dance with a sweater girl. My luck. I always get the ones that knit them, not the ones that wear them.
I like that one. I like that.
All the boys had to entertain at the dance, and I told some of your jokes. I'll be able to take the cast off in 3 weeks. Before I close, Cousin Milton, I want to thank you for those expensive cigars you sent for Christmas. Next time, don't smoke them so short. Signed, Cousin Joe. Oh, wait a minute. There's a P.S. He says, P.S., I listened to the Rose Bowl game. I like football. It's a wonderful sport. Even Hitler is playing it. Everybody's waiting for him to kick off. Isn't that cute? Good night.
As you hear the applause of our studio audience over the air, let it remind you that someday you, in your homes, will become part of that studio audience. Yes, the time will come when you will see, as well as hear, the stars of the Radio Hall of Fame over a Philco television receiver. That's one of Philco's dreams for the future in establishing the Radio Hall of Fame. There's as much to delight the eye as to please the ear on these programs. And for some tomorrow, we see the opportunity to bring to your homes the charm and personality as well as the art of these performers. That's the promise of television, as it has grown to maturity in the Philco laboratories. During 15 years of research, Philco engineers have made vital contributions to its progress. Today, an experimental audience in Philadelphia is enjoying studio programs and sports events direct from the scene through the Philco television station. When victory is won and scientists may return to their peacetime tasks, Philco will be in the forefront of the activities that will make television nationwide. And you will be able to look to Philco for the same standards of quality and performance in television that have made it the leader in the field of radio for 12 straight years.
Same girl and another song. This time an old song recommended to the Hall of Fame by the verdict of the years. The girl is Georgia Gibbs, of course. The song, Harold Arlen's Stormy Weather. Incidentally, Miss Georgia hails from Worcester, Massachusetts. She has a down east accent, a sweetheart in the army, and a beautiful mahogany tan acquired by sunbathing among the gag writers on the roof of the Hollywood Plaza. Miss Georgia in Stormy Weather.
I walk around heavy-hearted and sad. Night comes around and I'm still feeling bad. The rain pouring down, blinding every hope I have. It's bittering, battering, beating and spattering. It drives me mad. I don't know why. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together. Keeps raining all the time. Life is bare, gloom and misery everywhere. Stormy weather, I just can't get my poor self together. So weary all the time, the time. So weary all the time. Walked in and met me. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Life is gone. my man and I ain't together. Keeps raining all the time. Keeps on raining
A toast, ladies and gentlemen, to the institution of matrimony and to a pair of shining lights among the blissfully wedded, George Nathaniel Burns and Grace Ethel Cecile Rosalia Allen. In short, to the Philco Hall of Fame, at Variety's invitation, enter Gracie Allen and husband George Burns. George and Gracie met originally in Union Hill, New Jersey, always a romantic spot, and almost immediately joined forces for life. That partnership has paid off in love for two and laughter for millions. We journey then in the twinkling of an engineer's eye to Hollywood, where we meet the people who live in the Burns house, George and Gracie.
Gracie, when is our laundry coming back? I feel silly running around bare without a shirt.
Well, I'm kind of glad your shirts haven't come back. You look so manly without one.
You really think so?
Yeah. You're mama's big, bare-chested caveman.
Sure.
No, I love a man's figure when it starts out real broad and then tapers right off. That's how it is with your shoulders and hips.
It is?
Yeah. You see, you're a yard wide here, and then you get narrower and narrower until we get right up to those darling little shoulders.
Yes, I'm your dream man.
Oh, I love your figure, George. And you know what gives me a thrill?
What?
The hair on your chest.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, it's such a cute little curly one.
Yes, I've always been fond of that one, too.
You know something, George? I wouldn't swap you for Gary Cooper, Paul Henry, and Charles Boyer all put together.
Well, that's nice.
What would I have if I put them together? Just a tall, skinny man with two accents.
Now, look, Gracie.
Yeah, I'm mad about you, dear. Let other women dream about finding a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow. Our marriage was my rainbow, and you were the pot I found.
You make me very happy. But I'd even be happier if I had a shirt to put on.
Oh, you know, Judge, seeing you like this reminds me of our wedding night. That was the first time I ever saw you without a shirt on.
I guess it kind of gave you a thrill, huh?
Yeah. There you stood, bare from the waist up, except for that little money belt.
Was I wearing that?
Yeah, and I was surprised. When you were courting me, you always carried your money in your shoe.
I did?
Yeah. I used to look out the window and watch you coming up the walk when we had a date. If you didn't limp, I knew we'd stay home.
Gee, you're really bringing back memories. Remember our wedding, Gracie?
Oh, sure.
We had a simple little ceremony, and I gave the minister $2.
No, you gave him $5.
Yeah, I gave him $2.
You gave him... George Burns, you forgot to give me my change.
Well, I was so excited, I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Remember after the ceremony, we went to the Hotel St. Elmo, the nicest hotel in town?
Seemed like the nicest hotel in the whole world that night.
Oh, you said I was the most beautiful bride in the whole world. I loved hearing you say that, even though I knew it was true.
Well, Gracie, you were the most beautiful bride in the whole world.
Yeah, and you were the handsomest groom in that room.
Well, thanks, kid.
We had the bridal suite, room 206.
Gosh, you even remember the number, huh?
Oh, sure. The room next to ours was 208, and then came 210, and then 212, and then came our bathroom.
All right.
I remember every little detail of our wedding night. We had dinner in our room, and then we unpacked our bags.
Yeah.
And then we played a few games of checkers.
That's right.
Oh, but I was too excited to play well. Mama beat me every game.
Dear old Mama. Believe me, honey, if there's ever a second honeymoon, it's just going to be for the two of us.
Well, all right, dear. But Mama and I will miss you.
I guess so. You know?
Yeah. Oh, come in.
Oh, hi, folks.
Oh, it's Bill Goodwin. Come in.
Well, hello, Bill.
Hello, George. Say, that shirt you got on fits you kind of loose, doesn't it?
I happen to be bare from the waist up.
Oh, I see what Bill means, dear. Please tuck it in.
Oh, no, don't bother, George. You have such a cute little chummy.
A chummy?
Yeah, that's a combination chest and tummy.
George and I have been reminiscing about our wedding. Remember that wonderful day when he carried me across the threshold?
Well, I ought to, Gracie. I helped him carry you.
Look, funny man, what's on your mind?
Well, George, I saw this letter lying on your sidewalk. I guess the postman dropped it. It's addressed to Gracie Allen.
Oh, I wish people wouldn't call me Gracie Allen. I've been Mrs. George Burns ever since that day when a certain tall, handsome man came along and pronounced George and me man and wife.
Well, see, that must have been a nearsighted justice of the peace if he pronounced George a man.
Oh, very funny. Bill, thanks for bringing the letter in. See you later.
Okay. Well, goodbye, Gracie.
Goodbye.
So long, pin-up boy.
Oh. Who's the letter from, dear?
Oh, it's from my brother, Willie. He's going into the service, you know.
He is, huh? Well, if everybody buckles down to their jobs, I think we can win the war anyway.
Well, George Burns, how can you talk that way? My brother Willie will be a wonderful soldier. I bet he isn't in the army 2 weeks before they make him at least an ensign.
Oh, sure. Or maybe even a commodore.
He had to give up that big new job he just got, of course. But I guess the army needs him even more.
What big new job?
Oh, it was a very important position. They asked him to clean out some bottlenecks at one of the biggest plants out here.
Really? Which one?
7-Up.
I see, and now he's in the army.
Well, practically. He takes his physical today, and then he'd be off for some remote corner of the earth like Alaska, China, the Tommy Manville Islands, Burma.
The Tommy Manville Islands?
Yes, Burma.
The Tommy, you don't mean the Solomon Islands.
Oh, yeah, that's the place. I knew it had a bunch of wives.
Well, you were pretty close.
Yeah, anyway, I went shopping yesterday and bought some presents for Willie.
Things for your brother to take away with him.
Uh-huh, stuff the army doesn't buy for their soldiers for some silly reason. You know, like a waffle iron and a smoking stand.
That's the kind of stuff you bought him?
Sure. I bought him a bridge table and a rowing machine and an electric fan.
Stuff that'll come in very handy.
I should say it will, especially the electric fan. Suppose they send him to some hot place like New Guinea. Can't you just see that poor boy out there in that steaming jungle suffering from the heat? And then he turns on my electric fan.
Where does he plug it in?
Then I bought him a billiard cue. Vacuum cleaner. Oh, and just in case they send him to Alaska, I'm giving him a beautiful picture of my sister Bessie to hang in the barracks.
Your sister Bessie?
Yes.
Maybe the boys would rather have a picture of Lana Turner hanging in the barracks.
Ah, don't worry. After the boys have been in Alaska a few months, Bessie will look just as good to them.
You might have something there, Gracie.
And also, in case he goes to Alaska, I got him a very special kind of a nightshirt.
What's so special about it?
Well, it's really three nightshirts all sewed together.
3 nightshirts sewed together?
Yeah. Well, the nights are much longer up in Alaska.
I'd throw in a few thousand sleeping pills, too. What if they should send him right into the front line?
No, I thought of that. That's why I got him a Swiss yodeler's costume.
A Swiss yodeler's costume?
Certainly. If he gets into the front lines, he'll be very anxious to appear neutral.
Gracie, open the letter.
Oh, the letter. All right.
Well, what does it say?
Oh, George, my brother's going to be a bombardier.
Well, good for Willie.
Oh, now I know what to get him. A bucket of waste kitchen fat.
A bucket of waste kitchen fat?
Well, they make bombs out of that.
I know that, I know.
Well, you see, my brother Willie will drop the grease on the streets of Berlin, and hundreds of Germans will slip and fall.
I see.
That'll make those heinies sore.
Our thanks to George, Gracie, and Bill Goodwin. For what Variety calls with admirable clarity, the blow-off, we proceed to Broadway's biggest hit of our time, Oklahoma. Paul, the chorus, and the orchestra boys into the title song as follows. week on the Radio Hall of Fame, Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Catherine Grayson, and another lineup of front-rank personalities recommended by Variety for your pleasure. We'll expect you at the gates of the hall this time next week, this station. Signed, Deems Taylor.
The production and writing staff of the Radio Hall of Fame includes D. Engelbach, George Faulkner, and Abel Green, editor of Variety. Special musical arrangements are by Ted Dale. George Burns and Gracie Allen are sponsored by Swan Soap. Raymond Graham Swing by the Saucony Vacuum Oil Company. Georgia Gibbs by Camel Cigarettes. This is Glenn Riggs wishing you a happy new year from Philco dealers and distributors throughout the United States and Canada. And from the Philco Corporation, makers today of radio, communications, and electronic materials to help win the war. Makers tomorrow of materials for good living in a world at peace. This is the Blue Network.